Okay, just one more time on your name then.
And also the date?
Yeah.
Today is Thursday, November 16th, 2006. My name is Dana Nasrallah. My first name spelled D-A-N-A. My last name spelled A-L-N-A-S-R-A-L-L-A-H. Would you please identify yourself?
My name is Larry McClure, and I'm a resident of Tualatin. We've lived here since 1972 in May of that year. And I'm 65 years old, and am a person who lived between wars, you might say. I was never part of one, but I was in a family that did have a role in that first war that we'll talk about. And of course now I'm a parent and grandfather, and can see the issues that we need to address as a country as we now are living through another war.
When were you born?
And I was born in March of 1941, March 18th. And that was a time when there was conflict both in Europe and in Asia over same kinds of issues that we see today in terms of world problems. In that time, though, there was concern about dictators and the rise of the German force in Europe, taking over that part of the world, in effect, leading efforts to eliminate entire populations of people. And of course, here in the USA, as I understood it, there was great concern about that, naturally, and people were worried about it, but had yet not entered the conflict here in the U.S. So we were at a time of expectation and wonder, apparently, and that was when I was born. My parents were school teachers in Tennessee, and had gotten married in 1940. June of 1940. And so then I came along in 1941, and we entered then a period of great concern in our country, in which it culminated the Pearl Harbor bombing. And that was December 7th, 1941. And from what I'm told, of course, the nation was paralyzed by that, completely surprised by it. And so our president then, President Roosevelt, made a speech on the radio. In those days, everybody listened to the radio very carefully. And that's when he made the famous speech declaring war on Japan. And then we entered into that conflict in a major way because our country had been harmed by the bombing of Pearl Harbor. So, from what I can tell, from the stories I've heard, the nation rallied around this whole goal, and there was no debate about it. That people believed in that war, and they understood that everybody had to work together.
What were your parents' role in this?
Well, my parents, like I said, were teachers. And so from what I'm told, the young men at that time immediately wondered how they could enlist in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force to join in the cause. And so my father was a slightly built man. Apparently didn't have enough weight to get into the military. And from what he told me, he went to the place where you enlisted to join the military, particularly the Air Force, is what he wanted to do. They would not accept him because he didn't weigh enough. But to get ready for that test, he ate a lot of bananas, he said, to try to increase his weight, but that didn't work. So they did not let him in. However, they did need people to train pilots to fly the airplanes. And he was interested in aviation, and so he enlisted, in effect, to be a trainer of pilots in the Air Force. So, in later that year, 1941, my parents, apparently, we moved, as I was a baby, to Florida, to a place that trained pilots. And so, during the rest of the war, from 1941 to 45, that's where we lived, at a place where they were getting the young men. Apparently no women were flying planes then. And so he taught them how to do that. Then in 1945, and I don't remember the date, when the end of World War II occurred, there was great celebration. And I was about 4 years old. And I can vaguely remember lots of horns sounding and bells ringing. And there were parades in our little town in Florida where we lived. Lots of excitement that the war was over. And peace had come. So, after that, the nation rallied together then and tried to rebuild, not only here, but overseas, try to help recovery occur. However, during that period of time, from 1941 to 1945, another part of our history here locally was important to the war, and that was building of big ships here in Portland. And again, I was not here then, but my wife's parents lived here in Portland, and they built lots of ships here at the shipyards and in the Port of Portland area. And they did them very quickly, and they hired everyone. Women were very important in that part of it. And so everyone joined in. There was no disagreement about this war. Everybody had believed in it and participated.
What was the point of view that you had versus the point of view your parents had?
Well, again, at that time, I was just young, but I just remember the excitement of that whole effort. Everybody pulled together, and that meant everybody sacrificed something, too, because in those days, people were issued little coupons or ration tokens, and because they wanted to have most of the food and supplies going into the war effort to support the men and women fighting and around the world, actually. So everybody joined in to save energy, to save food, to get it to the right places where they needed it. Even the tinfoil on gum wrappers. And do you still see tinfoil around pieces of gum,
yeah,
little aluminum wrappers? Everybody saved that because every little bit could go into building an airplane. And today we save when recycle pop cans, right? Well, in that time it was the tinfoil around gum even was saved because everybody really believed in what was happening. Now that was different then as we came into these later wars where there has not been agreement about whether we should be involved or not as a country. And so that was the big thing that I, as I grew up then, I kept hearing about these other wars, like Korea. And we had a Korean conflict or war in the 1950s. again, the big issue in Korea and also in Vietnam was both a cold and a hot war. It was worrying about communism spreading. And again, this was sort of a follow-on to the big world war of domination by one nation or point of view. And it was a later concern then about this philosophy called communism of people who wanted to sort of take control of everything in the world, and our country being a democracy where we all agreed on things, sometimes disagreed, but we voted on things, we had our way of life, our free and open society where points of view are debated, elections are held. That was an alternative to what we were seeing in Europe, where communism was spreading, and then in Asia, Vietnam, and then to today in Korea, North and South Korea. That is a leftover kind of issue still today from that period in 1950s when we were fighting again a communistic society in the North, and that's still there today. But they did settle it after a while in Korea by drawing that line between North and South Korea. But it's still now we're hearing again about the nuclear power being possibly threatened in North Korea. And some of the same issues then are still emerging back again here with Iraq and the war on terror. It's sort of like history keeps recycling, and we don't learn sometimes these lessons from the past. So that was some of the things that I began to understand as we got into my young adulthood, which would be age 21, when I was through school. I had been in public schools all over the place, actually. We moved around a lot, maybe like you. We lived in, after that wartime in Florida, and we moved to Oregon the first time, and lived here for a while, and that's when I began to understand what had happened here in Portland and in Oregon during World War II, because there had been actual fears here in Oregon about the Japanese coming to our coast, bombing Oregon, in fact. And that did happen. Submarines came off our Oregon coast. They never succeeded in really doing much damage, but they actually did throw out some bomb-like things that started forest fires in southern Oregon. And we had a fort built at the mouth of the Columbia, at the coast, Fort Stevens. That's a big state park today. But that was all built to protect us from what we feared to be Japanese invasion. And here in Portland area, we were hearing this when we moved, about people that would, and my wife's father, in fact, was one of the volunteers in Portland that would sort of safeguard an area of Portland. They would walk around at night during World War II to make sure the people's lights were out, because they were worried that if Japanese bombers came and they saw the lights of Portland, that they might drop bombs right here. So there was these wardens and volunteers concerned about safety and security on our shores. And as it turned out later, we learned that the Japanese had come fairly close with their submarines, like I said. But actually, no lives were lost, I don't believe. I might be wrong on that. There might have been some life lost down in southern Oregon, but I cannot remember. So anyway, when we came to Oregon the first time then, we actually lived here twice, I have. There was rebuilding going on. People, the war was over, and the economy started to grow again, and people farmed and manufactured, and life was getting better. We because they'd been sacrificing for the war, and now there was a rebirth of and new things needed for people's homes and rebuilding, and people had jobs. And actually, a real benefit of World War II was what's called the GI Bill. All the young men and women who fought in World War II were given an amount of money to go to college after the war was over. And so all these young men, and mostly young men, were able to go to college and get education and get good jobs. And so in those days, it was a volunteer situation, but people got some real benefit when they got home. Later, now, when I'm a young adult and I'm in college, we get involved in the Vietnam. And this was one of those examples where there was not total agreement about whether we should be there. And so that, I guess, began what we might call today the issue still with us with Iraq, where there's no total agreement about whether we should be there. It's just debated, and it depends on who's elected, as we saw in this election now, where this could change. Our involvement in Iraq could change because a new Congress, and maybe the president will take us on a different course on that. But in Vietnam, it was the same situation. Several presidents were involved there in those decisions of getting us involved over a period of time. And in fact, one president, Lyndon Johnson, finally resigned, mainly because of the morass of the, he got mired down. We were in Vietnam then by lots of issues, and he resigned. And so it does have an effect on our country now. The different views of war, or they're just not total agreement. World War II was total agreement, but not now. So we also went away during Vietnam, there was a draft. That meant they needed men, mostly men, to join the army and the other military organizations. So they drafted you. And when I was in college, when you were going to college, you didn't have to be drafted, as I remember it, during that Vietnam buildup. And then I got a job as a teacher, and teachers were a protected group. They didn't, when I started teaching, they didn't have to go into the army. They figured they needed you in the classrooms teaching kids. So I taught 4 years that way here in Portland area. And every year my principal would have to write to the draft board and ask if I could be absolved or relieved of going into the army. That was during some of the Vietnam buildup. But pretty soon, after a certain age, they don't want you because you're getting a little older. So finally that stopped, and I didn't have to go at all. But a lot of my friends did go into Vietnam situation, and some of them still bear the results of that in terms of what they saw there, and it affected their lives a great deal. But particularly because there was not agreement. And when people came back from World War II, as I remember I mentioned these parades and sirens and so forth, there was great adoration of the people in the army coming back. Thank you for saving us, you might say. In Vietnam and now Iraq, there's not that same celebration for those who served. And so it's a different world today. And it's still a volunteer army now. The draft changed after Vietnam, and you didn't get pulled out of your job to go into the army. But now you became you could volunteer to do it. And so when my children came along, and we had one, let's see, the oldest of our three kids graduated from Tigard High School in 1991, and he did decide to go into the Navy. He's a senior just like you. And you could do that. In fact, maybe you know some...
This is the year 1941?
1991. Now, this is my son who decided to go into the Navy. And so, just pointing out the different points of view about joining the military, this was still a volunteer situation, but he went in, as I say, I was about your age, and decided to enlist in the Navy. And the I mentioned that GI Bill of Rights that the World War II veterans enjoyed. Today, even for my son, the military offered a lot of education benefits, so you could, in effect, get your college education paid for by joining the military. And after you finished your service, you could come back and get a good education at a college of your choice. So he joined and served 8 years in the Navy. And again, we're not in a war situation during this period. So he got some good training, and electronics communication was his field, computers and sending messages using the big satellite dishes and all of that. And so he got some great training. So today, the military can be viewed for kids your age as a great way to learn a career and have someone else pay for it, and then get out and have a little pot of money anyway to help you go on to college further. So that's the way it works today for the military. It is totally voluntary, but during Vietnam it was draft. That meant you had a number in a big list, and if your number came up, you had to go. And they had draft boards in all those years, and the local committee that would pull the numbers and then decide, you know, like my own father, I mentioned, was not physically able to go into the Air Force, but they would help decide who went. But girls were never called up or drafted, to my knowledge. I think they were allowed as volunteers, but it was only the young men that were drafted. And during World War II, the same. It was mostly men that went, even though women played an important role in the military, even in World War II. And like I said, after the World War II ended in 1945, I do remember another thing here about my parents' involvement. Because we were trying to rebuild the world in that case, everybody back together. There had been terrible destruction in Europe and in Japan and other places. So they were trying to rebuild these places, just like today. We're trying to rebuild Iraq after all of that terrible destruction over there. I remember there was a family in France that my parents sort of adopted, and we never saw them, never knew who they were, how we even contacted them, I don't know. But every so often, my parents, I remember, would prepare a box of food and other things like socks, and I don't know what all went in those boxes, to send to France to this family, because we all sort of cared about each other around the world, rebuilding this world, in effect, after terrible destruction. So I'm not seeing that as much today, even though I know we're doing it in Iraq with our own government, trying to rebuild the schools that were destroyed and other, you know, the water systems, the power, the schools, like I mentioned, places of worship, all of those things are now being rebuilt. But it's not us individually adopting a family in Iraq, it's our nation.
You described the mood before as when the Vietnam had occurred, with them all being sharing and protecting each other and helping each other. What would you compare the mood from then to now?
Well, again, I don't think today that we're personally involved as with people as we were in some of those times, where we could adopt somebody, adopt a family, help
them. So it was more stressed before.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And what about the mood of the country? This is the way they lived, right? But what about the way the country was done? How is everyone reacting to it?
Well, right now we're seeing, you know, I think over there in that part of the world, Middle East, a great negative reaction against our country for being involved there. It sounds like to me that we're not winning many friends in the Middle East or Muslim countries by what's happening, because there's just not agreement again. In World War II, there was agreement that what was happening, particularly Hitler and the leaders in Japan, trying to dominate, take over the world. Now it's sort of reversed. Apparently the Muslim world may be feeling that the U.S. is trying to take over. And while I don't agree with that, I do believe that we're sort of in that same boat where it's big blocks of the world against another big block of the world, and so the West versus whatever you want to call it. It seems almost like it's Arabs versus the rest of the world, but I that would be too bad. But right now there's just not agreement that black and white is easy to define.
What about the war that, because there's a war that happened before in Iraq, now what would be the difference between the war in Iraq then and the war in Iraq right now?
I'm not as familiar with that earlier war in Iraq, but I know that didn't involve us. That was, wasn't that the one where other nations were trying to oust Saddam?
Yeah.
And
there was a lot of people going against.
Yeah, right. And there's no doubt that he was a an evil man, but apparently we didn't get involved until this one, of course, but this last 5 years. But the other one, you know, I don't know how to explain that exactly, because again, none of us probably know as much as we should. And how we get into these situations is a mystery to me sometimes, why we didn't spend more time talking and trying to resolve it through the United Nations, which was created after the World War to try to get nations to sit down together and talk. And I really believe in talking, even though it may take longer. I think it's if we can just keep at the table and try to resolve these issues before we start, you know, sending people into harm's way, the better. But there were these situations where power people like Saddam were building empires, trying to dominate other people, which of course we're not accustomed to in that way here in the U.S., where killings are over there apparently a daily event. And now still, this month, we're hearing more and more of within the country of Iraq, lots of fighting between groups, which we don't understand. It's another factor that I've been studying, and my own understanding of history is how our own Lewis and Clark, remember that part of our American history when they came out here to explore the West? When they were doing that adventure 200 years ago, coming across into unknown areas like the West was, west of the Mississippi, they kept encountering native people, tribes of different sorts, all of which spoke different languages, and none of which got along very well with each other. And they could not understand why these people just didn't think in one way and have one language. They soon discovered that they didn't have any agreement among themselves. They did have a history of fighting, and that seems to be what we didn't understand in the Middle East today, in Afghanistan and in Iraq. When we went over there 4 or 5 years ago and invaded Afghanistan, now later Iraq, seems like we encountered the same kinds of issues that Lewis and Clark encountered among the tribes here in the USA. It wasn't the USA yet as Lewis and Clark came, but they did not understand what they were getting into, and the fact that different religious beliefs, different languages, different points of view, these folks had never gotten along. I'm talking about the tribes, and apparently that's the way it is over there in Afghanistan and Iraq. Some of these groups have just never agreed on anything, and it's sort of been a way of life. It's going to take a longer time to change that. Even today, the tribes in our country don't agree on everything, and they will fight in a different way. They're no longer shooting arrows at each other, but they certainly don't agree on a lot of stuff, and we got to figure out ways of resolving those differences.
And for the military, how would it have, other than it changing with it being drafted before and now being voting, you go volunteering, is there any other way it had changed over these years?
Well, I think that's the major way it changed. Periods of drafting young men and women are over, I think. I don't think we'll see that ever again. I think the all-volunteer army is better, but still, it's going to take better education about the opportunities that are there. How does that work, for instance, here at Tualatin High School? Are the military recruiters allowed to come in and talk to students about the advantages of the Navy or the Marines or Army? Or?
Well, I'm not sure, but they do come here during lunch and you sign up
and
stuff like that.
And you can talk to them, right?
Yeah, and ask them questions.
So that's fine, and that was what was available at Tigard High School when my son was your age. And it really meant a lot to him. That was a big difference in his life. He was sort of drifting at that point, and going into the Navy changed him a great deal and made him a real positive person. And I think the military option through the draft, I mean through the all-volunteer approach, is much better. And just like you're studying careers, right, in this senior seminar now,
yeah,
you're learning a lot about the way the world works out there and jobs are created and how you can access them. But looking at the military way of life is still a great option for a lot of young people, I think, because not only do you get some good skills about life when you enter that branch, whatever it is, but you get that pot of money to go to college later, and they will pay it. They will pay your way. I'm not sure how it is today. The recruiters here would know all the details of how much is available, how you get it, but I think for young men and women today in high school, I would say that's a great thing to look at still.
And what do you think about the U.S. Army being in Iraq and being in Afghanistan right now?
Well, personally, I'm not in favor of it. I believe that we should never have gotten in there in the first place. I was not one that supported us going in like we did. However, now that we're there, I think, again, we're going to have to learn about how other cultures solve these situations. We cannot take our way of deciding things, which has been democratic process, voting on people, certain, you know, legislators and Congress people are voted on, and they sit down through a procedure that's been tested for 200 years. We can't expect that's going to happen in another culture where that the way they make decisions are different. And they have these tribes and all of these different sects.
Would you say that the way the U.S. is approaching Iraq and Afghanistan right now is different than the way they approached the Vietnam War?
Yeah. And it's a different world situation, though. Then, remember, I was mentioning it was against communism, and there was sort of an agreement that that was something we had to stop. But, again, from what I know about Vietnam, and I'm not an expert on that particular period, again, you had different groups within that country that didn't agree on things. So I think it's a little different world than even Vietnam was. So I wish we could somehow just all look at these lessons from Lord together and decide, you know, what could we learn from one to the next?
Why is it that the American Army is in Afghanistan and Iraq in the first place?
Well, because our president and Congress agreed at that point to go in.
Were they trying to better the country for them? Is that the reason they're trying to go in?
I think it related a lot, basically, to oil still. You know, our concern that that part of the world controls a lot of the oil that we need to keep going.
So they're trying to get it?
Trying to protect it so that we made sure we had our supply. Now, we used other reasons for being there, and that was...
The bombing?
Yeah, we used other reasons like tyranny of Saddam and of the war on terror. And I think that later was proven, you know, irrelevant. There were no weapons of mass destruction that anyone could find. And again, I'm not saying Saddam was a great man or anything, but the fact was he was evil, but that in itself should not have been the reason.
So that shouldn't have been a reason for him to go in?
No. I think it was other things. It had to do with the economy, the oil, the whatever reasons. I just don't agree we should have done what we did there. I think we could have kept the... there was a lot of folks from the UN, if you remember. That would have been when you were in 9th grade, 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
That were looking for weapons in that country.
Yeah, I remember, because I live in Kuwait, so
yeah,
I heard about
right,
it a lot.
Right. So what were you hearing from where you live then, or from your parents? What do they think about this?
Well, a lot of people do not think, where, like my friends and family, they don't think Saddam is a good guy, but they don't agree with the U.S. Army being in Iraq for these reasons, because it had been proven that there was no mass destruction there, and it wasn't any reason for them to be there. They started trying to, because there was also a picture in the newspaper of how Iraq would be built in the future, and they were starting to think maybe the U.S. is trying to, like, rebuild it for them, trying to take over it.
Yeah.
That's what they were starting to think that was going on over there. So they were trying to think that maybe the U.S. is trying to take over Iraq, and then soon they can take around the other places around it, because for oil, that's not a good reason to really come in,
right.
Nor is it a good reason when there's no proof about weapons being there for them to actually come and check like that,
right.
In that type of manner.
I agree with that, and I just, I think we got in for the wrong reasons. I think it partly had to do with our President Bush, who's still our president, that he needed to... avenge what his father had been humiliated before, and he was trying to...
Yeah, because like right now, maybe people are starting to change their views, because now the U.S. is already in Iraq, so some people still think they shouldn't be there, but then some people are thinking in a different way. What if they leave, you know, what would happen? So for example, for us in Kuwait, we're right next door to Iraq. What if the U.S. did leave? Would that cause problems for us?
Right.
Because we're sitting there paying for them now to be there,
yeah.
Because we need now the protection, because now they're already in there, and now that makes us and have like a safety issue.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, so now people have mixed issues about that.
Yeah.
From the beginning, they don't want them there, but now, since they're already there, it has caused some other problems, so maybe that they may need them, not wanting them there, but we may need them there for ourselves.
It looks like that's the way it's going to end up, that we'll be there for a number of more years.
Because we have to like face it that the U.S. does have a very strong army.
Right.
They're very strong at building up, and they're very strong at protecting and stuff like that. So our army is not as strong. We don't have as many people. So it's harder for us to protect ourselves.
Right. Because you're just a very small little area,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're a small country.
Right. But again...
So that's mixed thoughts now. But if
it
changed from the beginning, the way people used to think to where they think now. Now it's like half-half maybe.
Yeah.
From just talking to friends and family.
You still keep in touch with friends and family there? Yeah. And that's... now, is that a Kuwait, is that ruled by a, what kind of government is that?
We have a prince.
A prince?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's been in power for quite a while. It's
yeah,
a peaceful, peace-loving nation.
Yeah.
Right.
Very, it's, I like the way it's being governed.
Yeah.
There's some things, okay, there are some issues, but it's, I like the way it's being done.
Yeah. So how did you get to America?
Well, this is my first year here at Tualatin High School. I came, I had to come here for like doctor appointments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm just here for that right now, but I'm going to maybe, either I might come to university here or I might go back, I'm not sure so far.
Yeah, yeah. So you, you'd be called what, as a student visa? How
yeah.
did you get here?
Yeah.
As a student visa or something like that?
Yeah, I had also doctor appointments here.
Okay,
so
medical thing
I came
something.
Here through a visa.
Yeah, yeah. How long can you stay without having to change that?
Well, on my thing, it's, well, I have to, if I come here for university, I have to do
apply
a different
again.
One. Yeah,
uh-huh.
That one's a different.
Yeah.
But for this one, I can, it's fine for this year.
Should that work okay? You think you would get that okay? I know I've heard that because of the immigration issues now, it's, there's
yeah, they're very
harder
strict about it, yeah.
To get in?
I had to, we have to go to, like, the American Embassy and they make you, they ask you questions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I had on my on my passport, I had a visa to go to Iran, which I never did, but it was on my visa, so they questioned me a lot about that. So they ask you, like, questions like that. Like, they questioned me more than they questioned the rest of my family just because I had that visa. But I never even went there. I just have it on my passport.
So do you feel any fear yourself being here or concern? As being part of, from that part of the world or anything?
Not
no,
really.
No.
Because it has nothing to do with me at
right,
all.
Right. Well, I think we've pretty well covered
yeah.
some of the main things today. And why don't we